Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Off the ball, rugby.
I enjoy the box and I enjoy South Africa. I still love South Africa. So it doesn't sound like because I enjoy it here, I dislike what I did there. So that was the whole thing.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball, breakfast.
Cullum.
Hi, Jared.
How are you?
How are you, Jared?
Arthur, how are you?
Good.
Football, bloody hell.
Oh man, unbelievable.
You refused to get out of bed to watch it.
Sorry. 5-3. Same noise. 5-4. And I said, we'll leave it there. They won't get the 5-all, but it's a hell of a comeback all the same. It's kind of the goal before the goal, or the irrelevant goal that we've been talking about a lot this season, right? The great comebacks in Premier League history. This won't make it, but it should, as an honourable mention.
The things that nearly were goals that weren't goals that would have been unbelievable. There was a back heel half volley last night that just squirted over the crossbar in one of the games. I'm blanking on it now. And the overhead bicycle kick, which a complete fluke. One of the worst overhead bicycle kicks you're ever going to see.
Oh, Christian Romero.
His 2-2 equaliser. But because it squirts in, you're like, it's actually funny.
It's been a slow bicycle race for those two this season, I think you could say.
Go on, what's your head tab of the morning to you?
Slow bicycle kick by Romero gets draw for Tottenham in match against Premier League.
Snappy.
Fellow team, Snappy. Newcastle. It was very relatable as a goal to win a game. Very much what you'd see in the local park of a fellow who fancies himself with a bit of a bicycle kick, goes straight into the ground, goes past the collection of lads who are hungover, bounces again before it goes in, and then there's a big, and then that goal lives on and grows legs as the years go by about the bicycle kick to get a draw.
If you're Romero in training today, beautiful. You're like...
Well, he gets so much credit because he's a centre-half.
Are you not entertained?
And what was he doing up there for the first one with the header that went in?
Well, I think desperation.
But they rely on him. And so Spurs is away form, not bad at all this season, not bad at all. But you don't get an awful lot of credit for if your away form is very good and your home form is very bad. People kind of look down on that, you know?
Well, there's something fundamentally and spiritually wrong with you.
I think Newcastle and Spurs are very similar this season. I think it was about par for where they are. Bit of a Desmond Tutu, you know? That's them. Very little between them. Even though I would say Newcastle have probably a better squad. Bruno G comes on at half time, scores a lovely goal. Strange about Newcastle, Anthony Gordon took their penalty. Nick Foltomada was on the pitch. But Foltomada hit one of the best penalties you'll see earlier this season. A lot of teams don't have designated penalty takers.
And was Gordon a sub as well?
Rotation. Yeah, Gordon started on the bench. He had it was Gordon and Grimesh were on the bench. Came on.
Rotation, midweek game.
I guess so, yeah, they have another one. They do have a bigger fish to fry and all that in terms of the overall season. And then last night, Jake O'Brien, centre half for Everton, as they go to Bournemouth and win 1-0. Player of the match, Jake O'Brien, centre back.
Great for him.
Played the whole game, of course. He's
going to make it as a Premier League player.
I think so. And Bournemouth, on the other hand, they've lost 4 of the last 5.
They were second.
We're all loving the Andoni Iraola phase. But 4 of 5. And it's the youngest team in the Premier League history for Bournemouth last night. So he is that to defend himself somewhat.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a good game. It's a good night of Premier League, right? Because I'll tell you what, sir. This time yesterday, when we were running through the fixtures for last night, we're like, they're fine. He's a grand. Fulham, Man City. Fulham have an atrocious record against Pep Guardiola. 19 defeats in a row. Right? But Newcastle Spurs are so flawed. And then Bournemouth, everything. You're like, okay, yeah. On paper, can leave that off.
The flaws in the Newcastle. Oh, it was Bergvall with the back heel half volley. Would have been a sensational goal.
Listen, there's a segment in it all day. Then in Pele had one of the great goals that it never was when he dummied the goalkeeper in the World Cup and just put it wide.
He did tell everybody what he was trying to do afterwards, and that's why I think that because Pele kind of lives on, maybe Bergvall in years to come will also score 1,000 goals.
And I remember telling him, boys, remember my bicycle kick?
And I'd be like, yeah, whatever.
He said exactly like that.
Yeah.
It was nice to see because you don't see that in Premier League.
That game could have been a classic, but it was terrible until the last 15 minutes.
Exactly, but that's okay. That's what you want for midweek football. Now, you're giving me a look. You could go anywhere with this conversation. Your faces are kind of changing from disgust to interest to be like, okay, I might get involved here. But all you want to jump on here is a loving and Erling Haaland because he's part of the 100 Club. Congratulations, Erling.
The match I watched the most of was just, Newcastle. And I don't know how Spurs keep getting away with this. They are atrocious. They are an atrocious team. They have the most kind of uninspiring way about them. I don't know how they keep doing it. It's kind of a flaw in other teams. I know that's kind of a very subjective way of looking at it, but it was the exact same thing in that Man United match where they should have won. And it was just kind of like...
Another 2-2.
How does this keep happening? What? Like, the great fair play to them. They're a bit resilient, but my God, they are useless.
And do you blame the manager for that, or is it?
I don't know enough to know if it's Thomas Frank's fault. They weren't much better last year under Ange, like, so it's not. It's just such a strange group. Everything about them, they don't play football anymore. Like, they don't. The amount of niggly fouls the whole way throughout that first half, like, it was just good grief. It was unwatchable. I don't know. I think they're just going nowhere. Like. I think that was the fourth. I don't know if they ended up having one. I think it was the fourth game in a row where they've not had a shot on target in the first 45 minutes. Mm. Imagine watching that.
Mm. It's a long old schlep to Newcastle for an 8:15 kickoff.
Not for them. You know, they're flying. Don't worry about them.
No,
they're all
the
right.
The fans who are sitting through the middle.
I want to tell you both. I was genuinely thinking about the fans yesterday evening. I had a moment before the game kicked off at all.
I did too, actually. This is
terrible.
No one's going. You have to be living in Newcastle. You have to be an escapee from North London who has settled for life.
Brutal.
God, I could have lived.
And do you know what the worst thing is? What if you did make the trip, right? And you were working late today or whatever, working from home?
And you're not doing any work.
And then you're 2-1 down. You're 2-1 down. I agree with my friend over here in the corner. We're useless. I'm going to leave early to get home. And then you actually miss the equaliser. You miss the bicycle kick.
Well, no sympathy for you.
You'd have to have sympathy for these fans. You had a sympathy for a second ago. Now you've lost sympathy if they've left early.
Yeah, no, you can't be leaving early, lads.
2-2 finished, regardless. So their league position doesn't even look that terrible.
Can I just say, Premier League missed a big trick last night. Erling Haaland creates this moment of history, the greatest thing that you've ever seen. It's like, oof.
Now, why is it the greatest?
It's the fastest.
In 111 games. So he's
13 games faster.
Beaten Alan Shearer's, 124 game record.
He got 100 Premier League goals in 124 games.
We don't talk about him.
Good grief.
Because you know why? His graphic under his name has never changed. All time Premier League top scorer, 260 goals.
Irksome. He has like 20-odd goals written off, doesn't he?
From the First Division?
Yeah.
With Southampton?
Inexplicably, like.
Oh, yeah. It should
91, 91, 92 didn't exist, man.
Anyway.
So you think, right, we were thinking if this was some sort of American sport...
Oh, what they would have done was it would have been a marching band would have come out. Now, here the difficulty is, obviously, he misses a sitter after 3 minutes.
Do you know what they could have done? Released 100 balloons, 100 blue balloons, as a follow-up to 99 red balloons.
100 blue balloons, yeah. It's catchy. They could have auto-tuned Nina's voice to do it.
The issue is when you release balloons, though, they will ascend. So we won't capture. They could have done something. So then, you know what happens when you say...
It's an anti-war song,
of
course.
To me, right?
They could have got drones and said drones don't just need to bring terror and chaos. They can bring celebration of 100 goals.
And this will bring peace to people, I guess, Haaland getting 100 goals so quickly. What has been done before to mark something, to mark an occasion? And John Terry got a guard of honour in the 26th minute of his last game for Chelsea in 2017. I watched it again this morning.
And who begrudges him that now?
It's amazing. Because you know what is about it? John Terry's kind of, not really, but sort of disappeared. Because he was one of the most prominent people in British football in the 2000s and the first half of the 2010s. And from there, he didn't even retire. He went to Aston Villa, went to Orlat. And then he was coaching. And now he's in the Border League, isn't he? That's his thing at the moment.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's his shtick. And then he was on a podcast recently complaining that he doesn't really like modern football. Finds it dull. But this guy, you couldn't move for John Terry when he was playing. So when he had his 26-minute farewell, I was like, yeah, this is justified. You know, say what you want about John Terry, but he is prominent. I'll give him that. It's kind of gone, he's gone very quiet.
He has gone very quiet. I actually didn't know that he was in Baller League, and I thought that there was going to be some kind of management career, but there's no sign of it.
So he starts that game against Sunderland, and at the 26th minute he gets substituted, and a guard of honour is arranged, and the referees applaud it.
That was their own doing, though, wasn't it? Did they, I don't know, did they, like, that wasn't the Premier League doing that.
I presume Chelsea's sought permission.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, would they? Would you have to?
They had, so 2017, they would have won the league, see. That was Conte.
If you're,
they would have won it.
If you're,
the league was done.
So it was the end of the season.
It was the last day of the season, yeah. Yes.
If you're Sunderland, you're over there going, go, what are you doing?
Yeah. Sunderland players were applauding.
I know, but that's... had they already been relegated that season?
I don't know, but Chelsea were definitely champions.
Yeah, I don't know. I just like
I don't know.
Everybody loses their shit if something like this happens. I'm like, you know.
Now you're giving them the award because of the history created in the goals, given the number of games, right? Because of course there are many players in the 100 club.
Yeah,
many.
This totally fabricated, made for TV idea, but go on, yeah.
Like Darren Bent.
Ah, no, 100's a nice round number, isn't it?
Darren Bent. Do you know the only member of the club who has exactly 100 goals so far after? Ernie Haaland, of course, but he's going to break it next time out or whatever. Matt Le Tissier has bang on 100 Premier League goals.
Haaland should have broken it last night, by the way. There was another
hit the post twice.
You could see Pep in the second half of the header. Pep's like, wah! He's back on the pitch.
Oh, we have a Pep clip.
Wrestling him.
Might throw to that Pep clip very soon. But Haaland does 1-1, hits the post, and the second half has a header, which hits the post. But he also drew blanks against Leeds and Newcastle, so this should have been done a couple of games ago.
Yeah, he's obviously playing on his mind.
He's going to get to 101 and so on very shortly. But Le Tissier is...
Him and the dad used to sit there watching, going, oh, look, I'm in some of these videos. Look, that's me getting tramped on. That's me getting... dribble pass. That's me getting.
Can I try to shock you about some names around the 100 club? Just even a mild surprise. Can I get a mild surprise in here?
Well, because they're on Sky every week.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I don't be watching them. I don't be watching them these days. That's college stuff.
You flick through.
Dion Dublin.
Yeah. Actually, he scored a lot of those for Aston Villa.
He played a lot of games, like
Raheem Sterling.
Yeah. Okay. Never thought of that one. That's fair, yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised.
That is all I want.
I'm not surprised. Like, he played again for a lot. He's been going for a while.
You know, it's the same number of goals as him, and I am surprised, and I shouldn't be.
Raheem Sterling, still the highest paid player at Chelsea.
Kicking his heels. You might as well come on with us. Do you know who else is 123 goals, the same as Raheem Sterling? And why would this, I don't know why this surprised me. Dwight York. That shouldn't, but it does. I feel like he wasn't around that long, even though he had years and years at Villa.
Well,
and afterwards.
He didn't make the first
never really
a long
left
time.
League, you know, did he?
Blackburn and Sunderland.
Yeah.
Championship, isn't it? Anyway, look, we'll get back to that thrilling list. Do you want to hear from Pep Guardiola?
I don't think it's ready quite yet.
Okay, grand. Actually, it's something to look forward to.
Do you not have a... Do you not have a theory on the 100 goals?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Well, it nearly split us apart beforehand in a civil war and all that. Why do you want a civil war? But for the sake of entertainment... out there, I was saying Haaland. You know, I was only saying kind of churlishly, like, I was like, does he have the most unimpressive group of 100 goals because they're all bish bash bang?
What's
thank
that
you,
mean?
Man, I'll call you tomorrow, but I never.
What do you make of Dion Dublin's?
Huh?
What do you make of Dion Dublin's?
Got a Dion, yeah,
or Raheem Sterling's?
Huh?
Where's the pick of Raheem Sterling's?
So what's? I'll ask you this. what's the Raheem Sterling goal? What is the goal?
I associate him more with an assist, but I'd probably put him at the other end of those to the end line cutback.
To the end line cutback. Defenders are falling over themselves trying to tackle him, and he cushions it in.
What's delicate touch.
Dion Dublin, very specifically, looping headers.
Sorry, before Dion Dublin broke his neck, he was in the form of his life, and he was scoring absolutely insane goals.
Man United he did that with, wasn't it?
No, it was Villa. It's like five games into the season. He scored 12 goals.
He had two horrific injuries.
In yeah, he did the break. The
break of the leg was United.
The break of the leg was at United. It was flapping in the breeze.
That's
but then
it was.
He
horrible.
Then he comes back and there's a season for Villa, and it's the most innocuous thing where he gets a bit of a bump from somebody. But up to that point, I think he'd scored 10 goals in 4 games.
Yeah,
I think he'd scored back-to-back hat-tricks, and one was a League Cup game and one was a league game, and he was scoring every type of goal, and then was never quite the same after that. But does comes back 8 weeks later and plays. Sorry, his 100 goals story is
brilliant.
Brilliant.
And you know why I don't even think of him like that? And this is a credit to the man. He has many strings to his bows. And I mean bows, plural.
The dubs.
Because he has, he was a presenter of...
Homes Under the Hammer.
Homes Under the Hammer, wasn't it?
Or is it Location, Location, Location?
And he comes across like he belonged in media to start with. There's a bit of Lineker off him. He's very natural. So I don't even think, first and foremost, that the guy was a great footballer. It was like, the guy's just a good media personality. The guy's a good presenter. He's very comfortable on camera. He seems like you enjoy his company. Feels like football's not the biggest thing for Dion Dublin, and yet he's on this list.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Okay, but so your point here is Matt Letizia is your favourite.
Yeah, well, I get that. But now I've just realised that the better conversation is, what's the Haaland goal?
Sorry, I think there's loads of amazing Haaland goals where he's like a praying mantis at the back post. And you're like, look at the size of that man.
Obviously,
look at what he's doing.
I have a cold appreciation for what he does.
Because
it's cold, but I understand that we are witnessing the greatest, possibly, of terms of finishers, in terms of relentlessness and goal scoring. And he still misses the odd chance. But there is something about him that is unique in modern football.
Owen had a stat last night in the news round about or maybe it was in the middle of the show, about the number of assists. It's like 11 or 12 over the course of his games in the Premier League, which is not a huge amount. Makes him think it was a good figure for a number 9. I actually can't tell. I'm like, it's interesting. I would have expected.
Well, I'd like to see the assists for all the great number 9s.
Well, Dwight York obviously had that season where he had the same as
Harry Kane. Kane's a bit of a playmaker. Kane's a bit of a playmaker.
I suppose Dwight York did have a partner to be scoring, to be setting the stuff up for, whereas now the 9s are really, your job is to finish the whole stuff. So
I've whetted the appetite there, hopefully, to listen to Pep Guardiola speak after the game.
Did you enjoy, guys? Huh? Yeah, nice, huh?
Did you?
Me?
Did you enjoy?
My God, I lose my hair. I thought the players, they were happy to work with me, but today I prove it's not. I know you're going to ask what happened, and I don't have an answer, especially.
Do you think you will go down as the greatest?
I don't know, you are British, right? And you have been the best strikers here, you know, in this country. When I arrived, you tell me in 111 games you scored 100 goals? I would tell you, are you sure? And he did it. You are not City fan, none of you, I know that. With 5-1, do you expect the game we saw it? No, right? 5-1, everyone is over. Start to write articles, no, tomorrow. Manchester City is back. You know, finally, this kind of stuff. You know that? And after, to the trash. You know, start again.
Ale, let's go. It's obviously edited highlights.
Yeah. It was a standard length quarter of an hour post-match press conference. But what's your great line? He's feeling himself a little bit.
Do you think so?
Is this Pep enjoying himself?
Yeah, no, fair
right?
enough.
So he has, I mean, everything he's saying there is obviously has a blanket over the passive aggression, like, because he's smiling through it all, like, and he has a disdain for media. We get that side of it, and the stupid questions that they ask him would be his perspective of it.
It felt slightly less passive aggressive. So I watched that with the sound down this morning on the way in, and then you hear it there. And
what
like,
do what? There's no subtitles in that.
There was, yeah.
Was there?
Yeah. I'm not one of those. I didn't have earphones, so I wasn't going to make it out loud for people. I'm not a scumbag.
I appreciate that, because that is a problem in society that needs a whole segment on it.
Yeah, you could. No jury in the land would convict you.
It's unbelievable.
If you murder
somebody in the same place.
No?
Cold blood.
It's not cold blood. It's revenge for polluting our ear. No?
Like, it's irritating.
It doesn't bother you?
It's not cause for murder, you know?
Oh, it is. Well,
it's antagonistic to the masses.
Let's everybody do the same thing. Nobody step outside their box. Don't play that sound.
No, it's not like a creative genius. It's just annoying.
Yeah, sorry. It's like people flicking through TikTok videos on full volume on the bus.
And also people haven't proper phone calls on public transport.
I'm surprised this is the hill you're dying on.
I'm not dying on you the most. Like, no. Like, what am I? Like, just put in your earphones. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, you see, Arthur get annoyed, but then he has a great ability to go within himself
just
and find the place.
Dig in.
He's not actually really present anymore. But the
right. How do you take that?
People have legitimate phone calls on buses,
I know.
And they'll be like, and John,
she's pregnant.
And John there, my manager in X company, is a massive prick. And I was like, you live in Dublin, like, just like 6 degrees of separation, like, someone will probably figure that out very quickly who it is. It amazes me. This would be on packed buses that people have these conversations. Pep Guardiola to me sounds like he's enjoying himself a little bit.
It certainly felt a little better watching that than I did, because I just put it, you put together the passive aggressiveness from the other day, and wrestling Erling Haaland at full time, which didn't really become a big deal, but watching it live, you're like, oh, the Haaland thing is still going on, it's still going on. And in the meantime, something else had happened that night. One of the Spurs fans, the players, all that thing had happened with Spurs, so they focused on that instead.
Mm.
But he had to physically restrain Haaland, who was like, oh, just leave me alone, Pep, I've had enough of this. He hadn't scored and they'd won, and Pep was out on the pitch treating him like he treats the kids. Which of the kids was it that time he humiliated? And then the opposition players, and it's like,
he had a great one with Nathan Redmond before.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
That was investigated by the league.
But Redmond probably went away and thought, like, oh, he really rates me now. He's probably going to try and sign me.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Because that's also how he makes you feel, I think. Why is he giving me so much attention here?
But he did it against Newcastle a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about Nathan Redmond on the back of that. But it's just his shtick. It does seem very narcissistic. Where are the charges gone?
I don't know.
Where are the charges?
You know, we'd have one of the...
Oh, it's imminent. That was in January. It's December.
We'd have some of the most experienced, esteemed football journalists on this show, and we're getting the same answer, Ger.
Where are the charges? Let's be having you.
But you knew the day that this was announced, and you know when it was? I remember where it was. It was in Prague, and it was February 2023, I think, was when the day was announced.
Ooh, something's going to happen here. It's going to be interesting.
You knew
there's going to be asterisks.
You knew that day, as well as you know, on the 3rd of December 2025, that nothing was going to happen.
You're very fatalistic outlook on life. Fulham won't score.
It's not fatalistic. It's just, it's going to, like, everyone's going over this way.
Something has to happen.
And I'm thinking over that way. That's all that is.
No, because most people don't. Most people think something won't. No one's saying they'll get relegated. You know what I mean? Everyone's kind of saying, they'll probably get off. They'll probably get away. Yeah,
But you're exasperated with where the charges are.
Well, I think we just wanted the story to move on a bit.
But it's not. There's nothing to move on about because nothing's happening. Move on sounds like we're having the same conversation about it all the time. No one's even talking about it. They're just disappeared.
That's the point, though.
It has just disappeared.
Something will happen.
It has just disappeared. Like, yeah, Bermuda Triangle.
There'll just be a massive fine, and then we'll all be outraged for 3 or 4 days, and then everyone will move on.
You all too young for the Bermuda Triangle being a very important cultural thing in your life?
Oh, no. I'm well aware.
What? Yeah? Were you?
Yeah. No, it's more statitites, statigmites generation.
Huh?
Not Bermuda Triangle.
No, not as a way of,
it was a great conspiracy.
As a way of being killed. You're going to die. Static mites aren't going to kill you.
I know, but that's what
it's all.
That was my time. What if you would, even if you fought in them?
No, we had static mites and static mites in our.
No, I've been around for ages.
Static mites?
Yeah, caves. Quicksand.
I didn't doubt that they were. Quicksand disappeared in the 90s.
Quicksand and the Bermuda Triangle is going to kill you. Sorry.
Yeah.
Who's in Quicksand now? Not City.
Nettles. Yeah, they'll be fine. City, charges wise. But I've been thinking for about 5 years that Pep Guardiola is a year away from leaving.
And eventually, he'll
I keep on thinking he's just kind of sick of all of it now. It is because I thought we'd forever associate him with Barcelona, even when he went to Bayern, even the first few years at City. But he's been at City an outrageous amount of time. 2016, he joined that summer after Leicester won the league. He was Barca's senior manager for 4 years.
I think you're probably giving him too much credit with the sick of it. I think, like, what else does he have?
Yeah, but you can
doesn't have anything else. But, like, I mean, this
that,
is it.
That
like,
would cause someone to be sick or something.
But I'm just saying, like, what else does he have to do? Like, it's not like he's. It doesn't like we only know bits and pieces about him. And but everything, even the external interests he's kind of reported to have, all seem to be in service of what it can do with football. I don't know where else he's. What else
of,
he do?
He's one of the most contented people in the world, I'd imagine. Right, professionally, certainly.
Yeah, possibly.
Because at City, I'd imagine there hasn't been anyone to challenge him in an awfully long time. I don't think you're disagreeing an awful lot with Pep in meetings. I think he would surround himself with people who will echo his message. Yeah, and it suits him because it works for him. So he's a very contented life. But eventually you will get sick of doing the same thing repeatedly. And I imagine, I always think he will, but he's in this phase now where he seems to be enjoying it a lot more compared to this time last year when he was tearing his face out. And then we all thought, well, he's going to go imminently now when he's losing all these games. And he just always sticks it out. But I guess he just has the perfect setup, and no other manager really has it like that in the world. This perfect setup at a club where everything is really for Pep.
Yeah.
Like, who's the biggest star during the Pep Guardiola era at Man City? Of all the greats that have gone through it, it's still probably him.
Yeah.
He is the one.
Yeah, well, he was certainly asserting his big dog over Erling Haaland at the weekend, just before Erling Haaland makes it.
Do you think that's what it is?
I don't know. I mean,
he didn't do that with Aguero and...
Didn't need to.
De Bruyne and De Bruyne, company, other, you know, big players for him.
De Bruyne.
Yeah, but you won't outlast him.
Okay. Malatizia is your favourite 100 goals.
Yeah.
Nah, you're afraid.
Yeah.
You're afraid.
Afraid of what?
Ballina.
What am I afraid of?
Go to bat for Matt.
Yeah, go to bat for Matt, right? A conspiracy theorist, you might say to me, but he's a realist when it came to football. Some of the most beautiful goals you'll ever see. And they didn't lie, unless you're telling me they're made up. Some of the greats, right? Right. That double he scores against Newcastle, Ger. Find me a player who's more confident in himself after he gets the second one. Just look at his celebration. He's like, nothing could be going better in his life right now. Cushion, tie, volley, loops into the corner, and then we've all seen the goal behind him, and he flicks it over the defender. The only thing missing was the crisper finish. Puts it into the far corner.
Villa Park,
when he just finds his corner. Ewood Park against Tim Flowers, when he says, Tim Flowers, I'm going to hit your towel in the goal. And he does that. The Blackburn fans behind the goal applauding it, applauding the greatness. The flick up and volley against Wimbledon at the Dell. The chip against Peter Schmeichel at the Dell, when he's bopping and weaving in between United players.
In the
They changed it, but it was the blue and white he scored against. Yeah, it's even better because they could see each other than United players. I'm just talking about purely the most enjoyable collection of goals, right? So there's many on this list that I would love to watch back. Wayne Rooney's, Robbie Fowler's. I loved watching a Robbie Fowler goal, the way he'd find the corner. Aesthetically, very pleasing. Loads of them. Jermaine Defoe, the way he used to trash the ball into the top corner. Used to love watching that. But for me, nothing makes me smile more than watching a Matt Le Tissier goal. I haven't really seen a player like him before. I don't even know if he'd make it nowadays. He had no pace or anything. Well, like, what's his position? He kind of plays off the front man, but he's not mad for the running around. So where would he play now? He belonged to a certain time, and I enjoy watching his goals.
Do you know what? I don't know.
Robbie Keane to be good. He has 126 of them.
Yeah.
It is actually surprisingly good. I've seen that.
Yeah, okay.
Why surprisingly?
Because you think that a lot of Robbie's goals are poachers' finishes from the 6-yard box, which is, you see one, you've seen them all. But actually, he scores all types of goals.
Yeah, the Blackburn goal at White Hart Lane.
The goal for Coventry against Arsenal is
Coventry
very early
against
on.
Arsenal. Liverpool at the Emirates against Arsenal. First time left-footed volley to the roof of the net. It's serious technique.
No.
And good, not massively appreciated. Nicholas Anelka's on this list. 125. Anelka, like the ultimate, you know, mercenary. He'll be there, he'll be gone. 125 goals, some of them classics.
Yeah, he was taught to be a mercenary by Wenger, who sold him as a child to Real Madrid. Like,
well, you know, the biggest
where you get broken up by somebody.
One of the biggest misses Stevie G says is that Gerard Houllier opted to sign Elhadj Diouf instead of Anelka permanently in the summer of 2002. He was on loan with them. Anelka was on loan at Liverpool. Easy to forget about it. He was excellent. Didn't sign him permanently. They got Diouf instead.
Yeah, good for the rest.
El Hadj ain't in this list, you know. Big Les Ferdinand. Now I want to watch those. There's a lot of brute force in those goals. He gets a great one for QPR on the turn and shot from miles out against United. But a lot of headers, you know. But we've got to have respect for all of these guys, don't we?
You say say Big Les Ferdinand.
Yeah,
he wasn't that big. Smaller than you.
He was quite small.
I know, that's the beauty of it. But it's stature, George, how you carry yourself.
No, it's true.
There are tall people out there who crouch.
He togged out big.
Is Crouchy in this list? Yeah. Crouchy must be here, is he?
He togged out big.
Crouchy has 108 goals. And some beautiful ones. Beautiful goals. Crouchy scored a hat-trick against Arsenal for Liverpool. One of them was a scissors kick, not quite a bicy kick. The Stoke goal, touch and volley into the far corner. I mean, Darren Bent is on this list. Tell me what a Darren Bent goal is.
I mean, Darren Bent is a poacher.
We should collect the five least impressive collection of goals.
Yeah, but you're not putting Haaland among that.
I might do. He's just been updated on the Wikipedia official page. Haaland's just been added to Letizia. Watch that live. Cristiano has 103. That sounds way too low.
No, he only did like...
Well, he had two seasons. Yeah. The last two seasons. And then when he came back, he was top scorer when he came back.
Well, I find an interesting kind of dynamic, the fact that, like, it's always interesting to me with for the Matt Letizia one.
Mm.
Because with Matt Letizia, for the best part, the vast majority of us will only have seen the goals.
And the rest of the
Whereas,
time.
Like, we have seen so many more full games of Erling Haaland playing than we've seen Matt Letizia ever. You know, by a huge metric. You know, and I think that influences
this. Totally. Because, I mean, like...
I think that
it'll be an exercise of... Not much interest at all. But just something to do would be to watch a Matt Letizia game where he's quiet for the whole game.
Yeah.
And just see how he gets on. And you're probably not that impressed.
I think that influences it.
What influences it?
I think that influences the perception afterwards, like, oh, no, that's the best one. It's an interesting thing that the ones that will be looked upon most favourably are the players you'll have seen least.
No. In the case, because I've just said to you there that I agree with you in that sense of it, but I'm literally talking about his highlights of his great goals.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter when those happen. I'm just, they please me the most. Creativity from long distance is a hell of a skill and very rare.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's merit in both of what you're saying here. That you're coming to reason at a time when this is happening, and so therefore they are your favourites. But like the cold, clammy, dread hand of Monday Night Football, analysing Haaland being everywhere all the time, difficult to be like, oh, this is what we're living through is something sensational, which is what happened last night.
But that's a different.
I don't know if we said this on air. The end of that game last night was absolutely sensational. The 5-4.
Yeah.
Fulham played absolutely brilliant football.
You thought that your device was being sped up.
Yeah, it looked like it was on 1.5 or 2 times speed. I'm like, this isn't. The quality of football here is off the charts.
By both sides.
It's a different beast now. Like, it really is. It's I know it's kind of when something's slowly happening in front of you. It can be hard to pick it up on it, but the quality of football at the minute is off.
Probably unprecedented, right?
It's also in bed with the sound down, so you're like, who's that? And it's Kevin who's come off the bench, right? I'm right. Fulham 22, who was absolutely destroying the City fullback, and all Fulham wanted to do was get him the ball, and all City wanted to do was stop that from happening. And there's this incredible like seesaw happening where every time he gets it, like they're going. There was one brilliant bit where he dribbled past about five of them and cuts it back, and there's just no one there to. You've seen that side from the finish. There's no one there to do it. And it's also, Fulham scored all these great goals past Donnarumma. It's like, oh, he's just there to save the ball.
He's going
to
be shaggy.
He's a world class shot stopper. It wasn't any of the mistakes that you've seen him make before. Yeah, no. It's like, shot from outside.
Alex Obi's, it's a great
goal. Obi's was great, but like.
The other ones, like the first one, the Chukwueze one, where he rises in the corner, there's no stopping that. But the fourth goal. Like, oh.
Yeah, well, went through a collection of bodies. Like, yeah. It's got to give him slight mitigation.
Well, I think from the corner as well, though, he was very weak.
He was, yeah.
There's
Donnarumma, he's very hit or miss, I think. He can be unbelievable. But I don't think he's any Courtois. Than the consistency of Thibaut. Phil Foden, I don't think we talk about it often.
Very good.
You know,
good form is back.
I tell you what, right? My phone made that distinctive live score noise, and it was just slightly a hit. And when the ball dropped the phone, it wasn't like, he's going to score here. It's like, you know specifically what he's going to do with the ball. So does the goalkeeper, Bernd Leno. Nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, he's in excellent form at the moment.
And you know this is interesting here. So this is the Irish Examiner this morning, right? And it's just about last night's game, what we're talking about here. Fulham Man City. But then they have a little paragraph here about Czechia, just to keep us interested, just to keep us going.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in a different colour. It's like light pink. It's never nice to revel in a rival's misfortune, but the extent to which Czechia are in crisis deepens by the week. There's still almost 4 months left before Ireland visit Prague. It's the World Cup semi-final playoff. But turmoil abounds when it comes to the managerless senior team. So they basically can't find anyone. But it's such an interesting inclusion to this page, because all it is just reminding us that they're not in great shape. There's no news. There's no breaking news or anything. It's just they're in trouble.
Could we hook them up with a currently available football consultant by the name of Mark Canham to help them get a manager in time for the playoffs? Would that be a good idea for us?
Speculation is abound that journeyman Jurgen Klinsmann will be offered a job.
Oh, wow.
However...
Great press conference.
However, there has been mass opposition by fans to that.
Klinsy?
Yeah. Yeah, they're not having him.
I feel like both those things are fair. I think it's harsh to call him a journeyman.
So, yeah, that's a journeyman there.
Like, I know...
Klinsmann's one of the great football men, isn't he?
Yeah, like, I know his managerial career has been patchy. But yeah, journeyman's tough.
I don't
for
know
him.
If it's because of Euro 96 and they're like, he's not managing us.
I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out.
Strange grudge.
They bailed him, yeah. Well, I mean, that's their last final, isn't it?
Yeah, probably, so, yeah.
And it's up to Pavel Nedved to sort this out.
Wow. Yeah. No better, man. The quality of football is off the wall as long as Thomas Frank doesn't manage your team, says Bobby Dwyer.
I knew that would be Bobby. I saw Bobby on X last night. He was exasperated at the starting 11 before a ball was kicked.
Oh, they are bad. They're so bad.
Cantona made the Premier League both renowned and sexy. All the players became multimillionaires because of him. Carlinho says it's one Shearer, two Henry and three Rooney. Henry's goal is by far the best, Henry, not even a debate. Van Persie's in the conversation as well.
Yeah.
Henry's
Jamie is a traitor.
Henry, there was a point where, because you know, I was like, what's the type of goal that a certain player scores? Henry's type of goal at one point is running half the pitch.
Yeah.
Just run past the whole team. And then the Henry finish, like he has a finish, like, which is the side footage into the far corner. You can't do anything about it. He's telling you what he's going to do. He's telling you. And he can't do anything about it. But there was a goal he scored against Leeds on a Friday night where he just runs the pitch. The Liverpool one, same thing.
Cantona, or sorry, Henry.
Yeah. He was gliding past lads.
Very quickly. If everyone loved us, it would be weird. There is that sort of hatred towards us. Leinster channeling their inner Millwall. Everybody hates us. We don't care.
Who hates them?
Who hates Leinster?
Yeah.
Oh, everybody. In Ireland,
who's everybody? Who's everybody?
Column. All the Munster fans, they hate Leinster. All the WGA who don't like rugby, they hate Leinster.
I don't care. No, yeah. There's no hate.
They're not all in bed together now.
No.
No, no, no.
I think if you asked, Simon Zeebo and Peter O'Mahony would hate Leinster, but you know, hate Leinster for good reason. They're playing against them all the time. Leinster got the better of them for a large part of their career, if not all of their career. Of course, they're going to hate them. But if you're talking,
the system is biased in favour of them. They get all the central contracts.
Yeah. That's the feeling. Yeah. Now, do you hate that recipient?
Yeah. I can't deny it.
What? Hatred? I would say most of the country doesn't care. Do you know what I mean? It's not like
rugby fans, Arthur, is what he's talking about.
Well, you know, I didn't say that. I said everyone. I just don't know. Like, that's like, hate us. Like,
Okay, let's be having you in the comments about this then.
I don't know if people hate them. I think there's a big bit of indifference. I think there's probably a bit of reveling when they don't.
Sorry, the Munster fans who showed up in La Rochelle jerseys to the
But that's just like supporters. That's just supporters. Yeah.
Why
would
you be hurt by that?
I don't know if that's hatred.
No,
it's not like it's not like hatred would be like you don't want them in existence anymore.
I think there was a decision to make for certain Munster fans there.
It was a bit of crack.
Do you think Man United fans don't hate Liverpool fans then, or hate Liverpool?
But see,
you know what I mean? So you're saying that doesn't qualify?
This is exactly my point.
The terminology.
This is the weird thing, though. You're not saying that like one set of fans. He's saying everyone hates us. It's not saying well we're in a rivalry with such and such. Like, so everyone hates us. So for a good portion of the thing, everyone hated Man United. There wasn't a Man United fan. That's fine, because they're successful.
Yeah.
But like, I find it a strange thing in such a small thing where most of the players are like, most supporters are like, over the moon a week or two ago when Dan Sheehan scores that try. That it's like, oh, but they hate me.
Well, they do when he plays for Leinster.
They really hate me.
They do when he plays for Leinster.
That's rivalry. The whole La Rochelle thing about once their lads were in charge. I mean, yeah, because like the La Rochelle manager, like there was like there was genuine, like okay, yeah. That's great. It's a great, great.
It's not
thing
like
to was, happen.
There were
like,
just any old group of lads. Like
when they would have showed up in Leicester jerseys.
Yeah, but when Henry Pollock's Northampton came to town last year, like I don't think there was many Munster lads in Saints jerseys, were there? Well,
it's a good
point. If they'd been through to the final, they would have been like happily.
Yeah, but
they
didn't happen.
They booked their tickets
because they didn't play. But they should have played. Well, they should have hit themselves.
Very quickly, some of the other headlines. Kerry chairman warns clubs about payments to managers, saying revenue are going to come knocking on your door. Mac Hansen has had foot surgery and so is now a doubt for the Six Nations. Salah not happy at being dropped, and Kelly Harrington was back fighting at the Mansion House last night.
Does Slack keep Salah out now?
It's hard to put him back in the team after you won. You
I mean, eventually you will because they're going to play so many games and all that. But
I wouldn't overlook the thing as well. How poor a team West Ham are.
Alan Mann has stepped down from Carter Ward's coaching ticket. There's no specific reason, just as
personal reasons.
Yeah. So yeah. Let's see what that is. ITV bids to become the home of rugby. So that's the big news from the British television, which will all be free to air here as well. They've got the rights.
TNT losing a lot.
TNT.
Well, TNT losing a lot.
Well, TNT are losing thing as well, but
Premier League,
Champions League.
Yeah.
On broadcast, did you hear about the BBC in the World Cup next year? They're going to have next to no representation. They're keeping all their pundits at home. They're only going to send people out towards the back end of the tournament. Mass consternation, right? There's a big article this morning on the Irish Daily Mail, and it'll be in loads of places, that they had this staff party coming together to see this, right? And they did a little, went to some football museum and had like tea and cake and all that, opened the floor to Q&A. And the 15 minutes were so visceral that management were partly on the verge of tears because of the questions being asked.
I wouldn't debate that, but the Daily Mail is taking the BBC's...
Melt at the Beeb.
I wouldn't necessarily say bipartisan.
By Mike Keegan.
Yeah.
So, but the more interesting, I mean, that is like a genuinely sad state of affairs when people are on the verge of tears and work and all that. But more interestingly, for me anyway, is that their World Cup representation won't be that major. ITV are going to have the place to themselves by the look of it.
Well, they're going to do their coverage from
home.
Manchester.
It's a COVID style, yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to work from home.
Until the quarterfinals and semifinals.
But they said it's a money issue.
Yeah.
It's going to cost an awful lot to take them out.
They're also being sued by the US president, so.
But they're...
For $1 billion.
Yeah, but they're not happy, you know.
It'll be interesting. They're like, that is strange. I doubt that's ever happened, hasn't it?
Which?
They've always had their kind of...
Oh yeah, you trust the BBC in that sense.
They always have their big thing on the...
Yeah, whatever. When it comes to the biggest national tournament, it was BBC.
No, it is interesting. I think, yeah?
Yeah.
That sounded like one of our meetings.
Which ones?
You've been reduced to tears often, have you?
Very many. Very, very many times.
Is that why you go out of the room?
I'm the Dan Sheehan of this.
Everyone hates us.
087-918-180 is the WhatsApp number if you want to get in.
The often everyone hates us, we do care.
Yeah
but they do care. Of course they care. And it's grist for the mill, fuel for the fire.
I'm
back, baby.
It's Mikko amazing. Ioane
scored the touchdown in the corner.
Yeah.
Stick that in your book. He turns around to the Leinster.
Isn't it amazing how Munster had all that success in the noughties and everyone loved them? It's incredible. How'd they manage that?
Until they didn't. I was a Leinster fan.
I loved that Leinster team.
I was delighted for them. I loved that Munster team. Yeah. Well, I loved
strange.
I loved the players.
All right. Now what they represented?
No, it's just the supporters banging us on the head.
You had one incident where you had a bad experience with a Munster fan. All right.
You're using your personal experience as a reason to have ideas
against all of us. Like that's just one fan. Who knows what you did to provoke it?
Okay.
You could have done something.
Oh wow.
Nobody was there for proof.
Oh wow. What were you wearing?
Nobody was there for proof.
Nobody knows what you did.
Do you know Romelu Lukaku has 121 Premier League goals?
Well, we were only talking about that yesterday. Watching the Roma-Napoli game.
Yeah.
And he's missing obviously from Napoli, and you'd think how like he's so above that level when he's there last season. You're like, he's just bullying guys. It's like, would you do? I think he's Everton's top goal scorer in the Premier League.
You think you're right there. Who's Lukaku's club?
West Brom.
Still associated most with Chelsea.
Chelsea probably, and load of loan spells.
Play that Man United.
Emil Heskey has 110 goals, Ger.
Top player.
Yeah. What a genius.
Top player.
Still playing that five-a-side with Stephen Ireland.
Oh, it's not 5-a-side. I think it's 11-a-side, isn't it?
They have a proper
team. I don't know if he's on that team, though.
Oh, he came on for one game, sure.
Both
for
sons.
There was a camera there. Heskey's a fine player. Fine player. Was much maligned. Everyone made up their mind about Heskey at one point.
Yeah.
Donkey.
That's so harsh.
Unbelievable.
It's so
unbelievable.
Harsh.
Like.
Look, had a great career. Wrestled every last bit out of his talent, I would say.
What do you mean? You're
trying Tony Fatter to deceive because he had some really good games. It's like one of those players who's like, oh, this guy, look at what he can be when he plays really well. And then and stuck around until he was 38 and so gets his 115 goals. And I'm sure, like, incredible athlete, and but could have been way better.
Wayne like, Rooney I talks think that's about the bit, it was like, he was one of his best England strike partners. Heskey.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Very, very good to him.
No.
But he's one of their main strikers when Liverpool win the treble, 2001. And by the 2010 World Cup, he's still starting for England.
What treble did they win?
They won our treble.
Their treble.
Okay, but you can't call that a treble.
They won a treble of trophies.
Did they five trophies?
I'd be the first to say
Charity Shield
compared to another side's treble, obviously. Yeah. But he still was a key figure in that team who kept Robbie Fowler out of the side. And Fowler was eventually sold. And Fowler's on this list, and you'd like to see Fowler's goals.
He kept Fowler out of the team because Fowler had a row with the manager and was injured loads. And like, it's not peak Robbie Fowler coming through at 19 that Emmy Heskey's keeping out of the team.
Well, Leeds still paid big money for Fowler to get a past his peak.
All right.
And look what happened to Leeds.
Exactly.
Is what you'll say to me.
I'd also like to say that Emil Heskey got his 100th Premier League goal, I think, at 30. So, you know.
How about
put some respect on his name, you know?
Yeah. Okay, he's a genius.
Not genius. We're not picking him up and saying he's not.
You're not going to get to your tennis here. You've wasted your tennis time.
Which you would love, wouldn't you? Andy Cole.
It's time for us to move on.
Andy Cole, fifth on the list, 187 goals. Where are the penalties? You got to respect that. He gets very annoyed that he doesn't get enough respect.
He doesn't.
You don't even put enough respect on his name, Andrew.
Speaking of Andrews, Murray. Talked about it yesterday. I just want to play this clip. This is Andy Murray speaking with the Tennis Podcast this week. If we have
it within probably a week to 10 days of retiring, my perspective completely changed on my own career. Like, at times, you know, when I was in the middle of it, you know, like number three in the world or four in the world, and it's rubbish. Or you get to the final of the Australian Open for the fifth time, and it's a terrible result. And you know, the media will also help you feel that way at times as well. You know, like, and sport is difficult in that sense, is that you have a great achievement and you're made to feel like it is a failure as well. When you're in the thick of it and it's your job and everything, like, you know, disappointed when I didn't win majors. You put so much into it that it, you know, you feel a bit like you failed. But when I finished my career now, like, I went and watched my daughter running a cross country race and she finished like seventh. And I was like, oh my God, like, that's unbelievable. Like, it's so good. So like, as a parent, like, I'm like, that is amazing. Like, finishing seventh out of 100 kids in like the local school area. But when I was playing tennis, like, you finish second in one of the biggest competitions and you're like, this is just a disaster. It's just not an ideal way to look at things. It's hard to get much happiness and pleasure out of the sport when that is, you know, the mindset.
See, I just find it very interesting that he saw himself as a failure when he was turning fourth in the world, getting to five Australian Open finals and losing them, and he thought, like, I'm no good at this sport. And it's a hell of a thing to live with throughout your whole career, and then you only appreciate it when it's too late.
It's not too late.
And I find that very interesting.
It's not too late. And I actually think that it's great that he has this moment of revelation, but if he'd had that moment of revelation, he wouldn't have kept doing the things that he needed to do
so
to get better.
So that's the debate. Like, that's why I really genuinely wanted to play that clip for that very reason, about which way do you approach your career? Because Roy Keane would say the same thing as you just said. He'd be like, if you start enjoying it, you start losing it. But then what's the point in being there in the first place?
Because now Roy Keane has all the enjoyment of everything that he ever did.
I don't know if he does.
Ah, he does. I think if you look at he's the world's happiest man.
Well,
he's
every week just getting told how great he is.
Well, that's different. That's an updated reassurance of his character. Whereas Murray, it took him a week or 10 days after his career to realise, oh, geez, what I achieved is actually pretty good. But I guess he had to live in this era of playing the three best.
Yeah.
And he stuck with them. But he was always told that he just wasn't
occasionally
quite good
enough. Occasionally he beat them, but I don't think there's any way he would have beaten them if he was like, yes, I reached the final. Hooray.
Do you know, he beat Federer six of his first eight times he played against him. He just knew how to play Federer. And this is peak Federer that he was beating. He beat, like, one of the Australian Open semi-finals, one of those five finals, he beat Federer, and Federer was unbelievable. So he had this in his game, but he always felt that he wasn't good enough.
And that's the chippiness that drove him. Like, when he came out, he was angry and aggressive, and people thought, this guy, many people thought, not very nice. But actually, you know, you hear the backstory and the Dunblane thing, and you're like, actually, he's dealing with a lot. And I think the drive made him reach the levels. And again, he absolutely got the most out of his talent. I don't think he looks back and goes, oh, I should have won more. Because he was up against,
I'd say maybe he does.
The three greatest tennis players of all time.
Yeah, he does. But he talks about when he won gold at the Olympics, the biggest, like the next day he went traveling to America to play a tournament. And when he was there, he's like, what am I doing this for? I'm not enjoying the moment at all. And all of his coaching team were saying the same thing. And he says in that thing, one of the coaches should have pulled him and said, you're not playing, enjoy it. But he couldn't see it himself. He's one of the top players of all time, right? But he still felt throughout his whole career, was like, I'm not really that good. It's just
comparatively
is always a word that would be thrown into Andy Murray's tennis career.
Yeah, which is fair enough. That's the ball game.
It's like that thing you're talking about with the Letizia thing, not to bring it right back, but like, if you put him in now, that kind of thing his kind of talent doesn't suit the age it's in now. He'd be gobbled up. But whereas if you have Murray, if he's in a slightly different era,
yeah,
whereas like that guy's,
but I don't know, maybe they drove him out at the same time.
It's hard to know. Jeez, I think he has nothing to worry about, though. I think it's unbelievable.